Right now.
Okay.
All right. All right, so I'm not recording at all.
No, please don't.
I'm recording.
All right. All right, so three, two, one. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Seeds of Liberty podcast, episode 50. We have the illustrious Michael Dean on the line, who is an anarchist and founder and host of Freedom Fiends.
Hello.
One of the, well, the most popular anarchist freedom podcast there is.
So, that's not Michael, true.
Thanks.
No. It's the only anarcho-capitalist radio
that's
show
true.
On the airwaves.
That is true.
All right. Sorry about that.
Yeah. I mean, some people would include Free Talk Live in there, but they're always talking about voting and running for office and getting signatures and being involved in politics.
Saying magic words.
And one, you know, the other day somebody talked about how somebody got mad at him at Liberty Forum. It was Jim Babb was talking about how someone got mad at him at Liberty Forum. And Jim Babb's really polite, so he didn't say who it was that was hassling him because the anarchists don't support Rand Paul. It was Daryl Perry, man. No, it was Rich Paul. Sorry.
Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, Rich's.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Rich's, and then I don't know what happened.
He's awesome on the cannabis stuff. Everything else, he still wants to vote.
He's high. That's why he wants to vote that's why he wants to vote. He's high. I like him too, man, but I can't get friends don't let friends vote.
So basically, you guys keep it real.
So what is this? Is this our offer to Rich Paul to come on to debate voting?
I'm not going to debate voting.
I'm right.
Why should I talk to someone about it? Why should I have to prove my point? I'm right. I don't debate. Debating's ridiculous. You know, every time someone says, "Oh, I'm right, you're wrong. You should debate me, or you should debate him." Here's the thing about debate. Debate is a skill that has nothing to do with being right. Like, debate teams, a really common practice in high school debate teams is to pick a topic that's the opposite of what you believe and debate it. Like, a good debater can do that.
Yeah.
Right. And that has nothing to do with whether you're right or wrong. It's got to do with rhetoric and oration. I mean, Donald Trump is a good debater, you know? Well,
I don't know.
He's a good orator.
Debating but a little different than you, Mr. Dean. So.
You're going to debate me about it right now, aren't you?
Huh?
You can bait all you want, dude. I don't care.
I'm not baiting you.
You're a baiter.
I defy.
On multiple levels, yeah.
I would agree. Maybe on about seven levels or eight.
He's a baiter.
The jury's still.
He looks baiting.
Oh, yeah. I forgot what we were talking about because I was laughing.
I use my anti-debating hoodoo on you and confused you.
You did.
That's better than debating.
So before we really get started, what is our show covered by? What kind of...
Oh, BIPCOT license. It's the BIPCOT no government license allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. It's a license that I invented. Actually, Daryl Perry helped a little bit and... Randy England, the attorney, the counsel for the Freedom Fiends.
I love Randy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I talked to him for the first time the other night. That was fun.
So, what would you say would be the difference between the presidential candidates of Daryl Perry and Adam Kokesh? Like, are they very different in what they're planning on doing?
I think Daryl Perry takes himself more seriously. I think I don't know what happened with both of them, but like, you know, at this point. I don't know. Adam Kokesh wants to run for president under the Anarchist Party and then dissolve government. It's ridiculous. I don't know. It's mental masturbation. He's a baiter, just like you. I like Adam Kokesh. I like both those guys, but I don't know. They're doing it wrong, I think.
I live under the idea of never believe anyone's bullshit 100%. So, you know, I can believe Adam Kokesh's Enough of his bullshit is what I'm saying.
I'm not 100% all in on him.
I mean,
I don't think he can run for president. Isn't he a convicted felon at this point?
He is. So.
Right. He can't run for president.
The only reason I think he's running is to, you know, do the campaigning and the
he can run for Congress. You can be a felon and be a congressman. He should run for Congress.
aren't all congressmen felons? At least?
Yeah. Well, you know, I propose two-term limits, first one in office and the second in jail.
Oh, wow. I agree with that, Michael. You know what? It should be like, look, you're going to jail. We're going to investigate those 4 years. Don't think we aren't.
Four out of the past seven governors of Illinois are in prison.
Yes, oh, this is true.
Alabama governors and senators is just—it's embarrassing.
Do you know? Do you know Mike Vandebau?
I know that name. I heard it today.
You don't know who he is? He's in Alabama. He's a 3%er guy. He's like kind of the most visible of all of them.
Yeah. I know him. Yeah. I know the name. I don't involve myself with those people around here.
Those people.
race is a big motivator for them.
He's not racist. He's absolutely not racist.
I'm not saying anything about that guy. I'm just saying,
Dave's generalizing.
The people I've talked to.
Okay. No, he's absolutely not racist. And, you know, he's a Constitution lover, but he's one. There's a few Constitution lovers that if you're going to be one, you should be like these guys. And he's one of them. You know, Ron Paul's another one. People that do it right, I think. And he's also been called like a threat to America directly by name by Bill Clinton. So that's something I've never had happen to me. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a good start.
You would think they would have blackbagged him or something by now. Then
that's like, I don't know.
That's like Adam Kogesh's book getting banned by the Department of Justice. I'd say that's an endorsement.
What, you can't bring it in the prisons or what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they blocked it from being in the prisons.
that was the first wave of achievement. The Freedom Print was going to be a lot of it was going to go to prisons and stuff.
Probably less. They probably banned it less because of the content of it and more because they don't want everyone in prison writing a book. Getting inspired for that. Seriously.
Wouldn't that actually help them, though? Because it would keep them more docile if everybody was writing instead of, you know.
Maybe.
You would think they would actually promote stuff like that.
I bet that would probably quell anger if it was like, look, mandatory writing every day. Oh. You must mandatorily write.
Writing comprehension class at 5 o'clock.
Well, no, mandatory is not going to. Well, obviously, in our world,
yeah, mandatory
there,
anything
there at work. I'm just, but I get what Michael is saying. What he was saying, like, you don't want anybody doing it. But if they are, I mean, most of them probably won't be very good, and it'll keep them busy.
I used to do service in a jail. I used to bring an NA meeting into the San Francisco County Jail once a month. Used to bring a speaker in and do an NA meeting. It's pretty weird. It was. The weirdest thing about it was that I had to sign a piece of paper that, well, I had to get fingerprinted too. Like, I've never been arrested, but my fingerprints are on record because I did that.
Wow.
But also I had to sign a piece of paper that said that I understood that it was a no hostage facility, which means, you know, if somebody grabbed me and held a shiv to my neck, they're not letting him out the front door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's, well... That's a level of commitment there.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'll risk getting killed. It's fine.
What is NA? Is that
Narcotics Anonymous?
Okay. That's what I figured it was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I remember the lady that used to bring me in there used to tease me because I'm short. I'm 5'5". And she used to say, you know, we had Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, in here, and he was the same height and build as you. and he used to get marriage proposals and ladies visiting him all the time.
Yeah. I don't know why she would compare you to that just because of the height. Like, that's weird.
I know. I mean, it's San Francisco. Like, you know, half the inmates are Mexican. Everyone in there is 5'5".
Oh, that's true. That's a weird concept, though, that the people that, well, those groupies that follow, because that happens with a lot of the serial killers.
Oh, you know what? He was 6'1". No, I think it was Charles Manson she was talking about. Yeah.
All right. That's a more apropos comparison, I guess.
Yeah.
Charles Manson's crazy. Have you seen the people that make the memes where they there's a picture of Charles Manson where he looks similar to like white Jesus, and they put like a Bible quote on it, and it says like, please share, and they get tons and tons and tons of shares, and it's Charles Manson. Not Jesus.
He's been in prison how long now? The last couple of generations.
Manson?
I think he got out.
Who? Yeah. Manson?
No. Manson, no. He's still in, isn't he?
No, I don't think he got out.
No, Manson's going to die in there.
Yeah, no, but he's been in there for decades. So like the last couple of generations actually have no, they've only heard his name. They have no idea who he is.
Yeah, you're right.
People,
they still, like, I've seen pictures of a bunch of like Vado gangbangers posing with him all happy. Then they're not that old. Like, everyone is told who he is if they don't know who he is.
No, that's what I'm saying. But to the point where, you know, people just ignore the picture and because they assume it's Jesus.
Oh, I thought you, no, I'm talking about the people in prison. Him.
People in prison, yeah.
So no. is there anything particularly on like the front of your mind that you want to talk about tonight, Mike?
Oh God, that reminds me of that. I finally read that letter.
What letter?
We're not gonna talk about that. Never
mind.
What letter did I email you?
Never mind. You said you didn't want to talk about it after that, so I'm not going to.
Okay.
I'll edit that out. The Mark Stevens thing. I'll edit that out.
Oh, that thing, yeah.
But he, you know, he used that name repeatedly.
Oh yeah, intentionally.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway.
Yeah.
So
was there anything you wanted to like discuss or talk about or?
No, man, it's all you. No, it's all you. Jeremy's sister. Talk about Jeremy's sister.
Oh, okay. Jeremy's sister.
Didn't we already do a show about this week?
The first frame I saw her in, what was the show? Big Bang Theory. I was just like, wow, I have a Big Bang Theory going on in my head right now. Holy shit, did I know I would start a podcast
That's not
with this
joke.
Hot chick's brother? I mean, how in the hell would that happen? That's pure chaos.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know...
I don't know about that, Dave. It's one of the most popular shows.
I know.
The chances of somebody seeing it and happening to know me probably aren't that low.
I know.
Probably aren't that high.
But, you know, starting a anarchist podcast, you know.
I'll give you that one.
There's a lot more layers to that. But, yeah, I mean, I love his sister. I hope I meet her one day. I know she's married, but I will confess my love to her. That if, you know, we're ever single.
Wow.
That's what I live with.
In Dave's mind, she's married to her. Wait, what would that be?
No. Future ex. It's not serious. It's not that serious. It's just, it's backup plan, you know?
Hey, man. I'm used to it.
I don't have any illusions like that. I just want a picture of her posing with a Bipcot flag.
We are gonna get that. Don't you worry.
Fun with flags with Missy Cooper.
Yeah, we're gonna have to superimpose her in there. Yeah, there you go.
No, I don't want any photoshopping. I want this.
If you're gonna do the fun with flags with Sheldon, because she was never in a shot with that.
No, I don't. I was gonna say fun with. I'll just label it fun with flags with Missy Cooper.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't think you want to like have her suggest in it that she's Missy Cooper because she'd probably get in trouble. That's how that stuff works. Yeah. She doesn't have the right to say she's Missy Cooper anymore.
Yeah, laws are insane.
That's all right. We're saying she's Missy Cooper.
I can say she's Missy Cooper. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's going to be the free embedded wallpapers in the 1.3 version of the Fiend. App.
I did get PM'd about that. Andrew wasn't kidding. He actually did send me that message.
Yeah.
And asked me if it was possible.
I saw it. It was a great idea.
Yeah, I mean.
Like I said, I've dealt with this my whole life. I'm quite used to it.
I mean, she's a knockout. I mean, that's all. I mean, we're ragging. We're like, we're busting your balls, but she is a knockout. She's a beautiful, man.
Do you have other siblings?
Yeah, we have a younger sister too.
How young is she? How old is she?
What is she now? 30. Well, let's see. I'm 32, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. She's like 7 years behind me, something like that. So
are your parents on Facebook?
My dad is.
Dad is,
and he's actually a member of our Seeds of Liberty group, and he participates every once
What's
in a while.
What's his name?
Bill.
Bill. Heisenberger. Is he an anarchist?
Yeah. He's an almost anarchist. He's the one who actually put me on this journey without realizing it, because he's a hardcore Constitution thumper. 3%er.
Here's a picture of him at your sister's wedding.
Yep.
He's handsome. He's a handsome dude.
Yeah. So I've been told.
No homo. Oh, he's wearing a shirt made of a flag. Hasn't he read the flag code? That's a violation of the flag code, right? Yeah, there.
Believe me, I know. He's, like I said, he's conflicted. I've got him almost there, though.
He's got a cat. I like his cat.
It's the older you get, the harder it is to change your...
he doesn't have a cat. If that's a cat, it's probably one of my sister's.
Is this him sitting with your sister and Turtle from Entourage? Or is that you on the left?
Oh, my God.
I don't know what picture you're looking at. So
I'm going to your album.
I'm going to send it to you on Facebook.
There you go. That's fine.
Yeah. So we got nothing we want to talk about.
I think we're fine now, Dave.
You know, that never comes up on The Fiends. We never say, so what do you want to talk about?
I know.
We just talk. You know,
I mean, I assume Jeremy doesn't want to talk about his sister much longer.
We had already transitioned. Dave, you missed the transition.
Oh. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm not looking at those pictures, but yeah, my dad, he's conflicted. Like I said, he's actually come to the point now where he will tell me that he agrees with pretty much everything I say. He can't really argue against me.
I just sent you a picture of what I think is him, and to the left of him is, to our left of him, I think is Turtle from Entourage, but I think it's actually you.
It might be.
Turtle loses weight for the movie. He's in shape in the movie.
So I heard. I did not see that. I didn't. The movie's out already? I don't remember.
Yeah, it came and left like a blip.
Yeah.
A blip.
Wow.
I didn't finish the series either, so.
So they just made babies without any male participation.
What?
Who?
Yep. I mean, do you want me to read the article?
Who's they? Oh, I thought you were talking about Jeremy's dad and Turtle from Entourage.
Oh, no.
Dave, what the
smooth transition.
Dave, seriously.
Are you reading headlines? I don't care about headlines.
I know, neither do I. Anyway, can I finish my story, Dave?
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Your dad.
He's at that point where he agrees, but he still doesn't see it as being realistic. So,
and that's a real big achievement, I think, to get one of your closest family members like.
Oh, he's the only one. Most of my family and my old friends have all written me off. They all think I'm completely insane.
No, but I'm saying that's why it's so amazing. You know, they have a close family member like that to get so close to anarchy. That's amazing. Like,
is your dad an actor too?
No.
He looks vaguely familiar to me. So did you see the picture? I sent it to you on Facebook of you looking like Turtle from Entourage.
Oh, that's why I didn't see it. I thought you were sending me an email.
You just have a backward baseball cat and a cap and a shit-eating grin is why you look like Turtle in this picture.
that sounds like me though. I don't know.
Where's Danilo live?
I am with Jeremy over here in New Yorkistan. People in the
I grew up in New Yorkistan.
Yes, Michael, that's me.
I grew up in Chautauqua County. It's the westernmost county of New York State. I lived there till I was 18. Or 19.
Yeah, I couldn't handle that cold.
We're about ready to leave. It's getting pretty oppressive over here.
Getting oppressive. It's been oppressive forever.
Jeremy's going to come live in my basement with all his dogs.
I know Jeremy's dominating Long Island with his pet empires. So I don't know how soon you're going to be able to go there.
I don't think you could walk dogs in Wyoming. Everyone just puts like 8 of them in their pickup truck, and when they go out, they bring them to the doctor's office and stuff.
Well, exactly. That's the problem. Like,
I mean, I think Jeremy, you're basically running like an agorist empire because there's like no taxes or regulations or licenses for what you do, right? Like nothing specific for pet sitting. Like,
there's. Right? I fall in the cracks in that regard, but
right, yeah, that's awesome. So you're by default an agorist entrepreneur, kind of. Right?
But don't I have to be dealing completely outside the? FRN system to be considered an agorist.
Apart from the fact that in the beginning, I love telling the story, in the beginning how you were like begging your local government, like, please, isn't there some license I can get or something?
Yeah, I was the worst.
Make up something.
I did. I said this the other day. I actually tried to petition the legislature to get a licensure. That's how badly I was ingrained.
I'm
not
saying that story. That's
man. I did. They asked me if there was a license. They said no. And instead of saying, okay, I'll be on my way, I said, really? You sure? Can't we get one?
Wow.
I was a hardcore statist.
That's really statist. I mean, I don't even think I guess Hank Hill would probably do that, but not most statists wouldn't even do that. They'd be like, all right, okay. I don't want to stand in line at the DMV. All right, cool.
I know. Well, for me, it was kind of a marketing thing because I was just starting out. There wasn't a lot, you know, there
people
wasn't a lot
for it probably.
Well, people still do. They don't. And when I tell them there isn't one, then they're like, oh, okay.
I think you need to print out a BIPCOT one and hand it to them.
I'm going to. Well, I'm starting to BIPCOT everything. Well, I told you, I'm looking into getting my truck wrapped in a BIPCOT flag of some sort.
Wow. I'm still waiting for the first like video of somebody confronting a so-called authority figure and presenting a BIPCOT something to them. It doesn't exist yet. It should, though.
I think I said that on air one time. I think I said I'd do that.
Well, Lisa DeLascio said she was going to, that her car registration expired and she was going to present a BIPCOT to them next time. And I'm like, I need to write her and say, please videotape that.
Yes. Well, she has to tape it. She would probably fare better than I would, though. She probably runs a lot less, a lot lower risk of being pulled out of the car.
Yeah. Hey DJ,
but I'll do it. Hey Carrie.
Hey DJ.
Wave home.
So Danilo, what's been up, man? Your wife's out of town.
Yep, she's in Virginia right now on a business trip. So I'm over here with the kids at my mother-in-law's. So that's fun. That's always fun.
Lucky you.
My mother-in-law, who comes from communist Romania, where she grew up for most of her life. So you can imagine the...
Wait a minute. She goes out of town and you have to go to your mother-in-law's. How does that work, dude?
She doesn't want me confronting my parents without her because my mother is quite intense. But interestingly enough, my communist mother-in-law understands the idea of not necessarily anarchism, but just being skeptical of government more than my mother, who is a self-proclaimed socialist and firm Bernie Sanders supporter. So,
she's going to be heartbroken.
Wait, she came from a communist country and she's a Bernie Sanders supporter?
No. That's my mother.
Oh, okay.
But my mother's the Bernie Sanders supporter. My mother-in-law, she's the
ex-communist.
Yeah.
So, what does she think about politics being an ex-communist? Or come from-
she doesn't really participate. She doesn't really vote. She doesn't really care. She mostly thinks that, most of the time government gets in the way of a lot of things.
Yeah.
Hates taxes, things like that. Immensely in debt. So
how does that work? Yeah. How does that work, though, when she was used to having everything done by government?
Right.
Well, how well did communist Romania do everything?
Well, I think her image of communism is more of a cushy image because she had a government job. She worked
That's what I was saying.
She was part of the bourgeoisie.
She was.
She was in the bureau.
The Politburo.
Right.
Yeah.
So, when people, reminisce about communism, I think it's important to ask, wait a minute, where did you work? What did you do over there? Because if you were a gypsy or if you were a farmer, you didn't have such a nice life, right? But if you're...
What side of the bread lines were you on, basically?
Right, if you're a bureaucrat or...
Farmers that would work all day farming. The government official would come in and harvest their stuff, and then they'd say, all right, now go get in the bread lines. I can't imagine that. I would go postal.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have any weapons. Although you'd probably have a pitchfork if you're a farmer.
And as I was talking to my wife, like learning about, anarchy and the horrors of communism and statism, she wouldn't recognize that communism could do such things until she read articles about the genocide of the gypsies and, other hated groups over there. And then she's like, wow, like a lot of stuff happened that she did not realize, because.
Because she was there too, right?
She was benefiting. Yeah, my wife grew up there until age 12. Well, 1994, communism fell in 89. So she experienced, what was that, like 7 years of.
Communism fell in a lot of countries around that time without a single shot being fired just because it was failing so badly.
Yeah, and I think Romania was the only one that they actually executed the dictator and his wife. they tried to escape the country, and then they got him and they executed them both publicly, like on TV. And yeah, like everybody watched. So
yeah, it was like Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
But then what did they do after that? I don't remember the history of Romania after that. They didn't go. It's not like they went free market after that, did they?
No, they stayed.
Those countries
stayed,
are all kind of socialist.
Yeah,
they stayed communist.
All of Eastern Europe.
Although she does remember the years afterwards. You know, like a lot more variety, a lot more businesses sprang up, a lot more like the TV channels. You know, became numerous, and you could watch anything. And you know, and you, oh yeah, the other thing was radio, right? A lot of radio was censored and suppressed, and then you know, Western radio stations were coming in. So that kind of stuff changed.
You know, it's I make a point of saying that the Freedom Fiends are the only, you know, anarcho-capitalist radio syndicated radio show in the world, and people are like, yeah, whatever. And it was, I like that you guys said it, because I think it's a big thing, because first of all, it couldn't happen in any other country unless it was pirate radio. Like it could not happen on government licensed radio. And you know, we're probably losing stations at the rate of like, you know, 4 a year, and we're probably not going to be on any stations in 4 years, but it's unique, man.
Well, I think radio is slowly dying. I mean, it's pretty obvious it's going to basically like full-blown robot control.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Well, it's beyond that, too. I mean, it's been getting snapped up by conglomerates. You know, there's basically two or three corporations that own, like, oh, I'm guessing probably 80% of the radio stations in the country. And None of the stations we're on are Clear Channel. I would be on one that's Clear Channel. One of the stations we're on in Amarillo, Texas, is one of those three conglomerates. I forget what it is. It's Town Square Media, which is the third biggest one. It's like whatever they're calling Clear Channel now. It's called iHeartRadio, and the second biggest one is Sirius, I think, and then the third biggest one is Town Square Media. Those three together own a big majority of all the radio stations. And then like the 15 or 20% that are left, and that's including talk radio and music radio. And then the ones that are left are like mom and pop stations, where like literally a couple owns one or two radio stations. You know, like a lot of times, like I call up a station and, you know, I get the wife on the phone and she's like, well, let me get my husband. And then he, you know, like they do everything. The two of them do everything. And, you know, slowly those are getting priced out of being able to, like, first of all, like most of the advertising is going to the internet. There's less money coming into radio. The FCC and like the Federal Trade Commission and other, and like the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission are haranguing small business owners and especially radio stations to the point where like, they can't afford to do it anymore. Like one of the things is I talked to somebody in Louisiana, not in New Orleans, like in a small town outside of New Orleans, who runs a station. And she said that the FCC like just walked in there one day. A guy came in, said, I need to do an inspection, which they can do. And like the night before, there'd been an electrical storm and they'd unplugged the transmitter and all the equipment so it wouldn't get destroyed by a lightning strike. And then they'd plugged it back. She was in the process of plugging it back in the morning and plugged the transmitter in, but hadn't plugged the emergency alert system back in. You know, the thing where the government can, you know, where Obama can take over your show by, you know, with his BlackBerry. She hadn't plugged that back in yet. And she got fined $35,000 for that not being plugged in. Like a half hour later, it would have been plugged back in. Her, like, she only makes like $70,000 a year. Like that was like half of what she made that year. She had to pay in a fine right there. So that kind of stuff, you know, they're really putting the mom and pops out of business, and the internet, just the market is putting them out of business, to where like, you know, they're all getting bought up cheap by these conglomerates that are in bed with the government. It's fascism for sure. And really, like, what I think is going to happen is, you know, the neocons, you know, like the Rush Limbaughs and people like that, like, yeah, we don't like them. You know, we think they're square, but the government doesn't like them either. I mean, they're really, really critical of whoever's in office, but, you know, if they're a Democrat. What I think is going to happen is, I don't think they're really ever going to, like, I don't think, you know, President Hillary or President Bernie, I don't think they're going to kick those people off the air. I think they're going to like relegate them to nighttime, and decide that, you know, radio stations have to serve the community. So they'll, instead of having syndicated, they'll have the syndicated stuff on at in the middle of the night. And most stations power down to like a fraction of their power in the middle of the night. And there's less people asleep, awake, listening. So I think what they're going to do is they'll have like kids from the local high school come in and do the programming during the day. This is my prediction. And, you know, they'll say like that serves the community, and they'll just have kids just come in that just sit around and like interview the local sheriff on why he needs more tax money for the drug war. That's what radio is going to become. And, you know, really, it's all about the internet, and it's pretty hard to censor the internet. I think people are going to be able to do what they want on the internet for a long time. You know,
podcasting is basically making your own radio station all day. That's, I mean, that's what's replacing radio, in my opinion.
And the quality's better. The quality's better. I mean, here's an example. Like, my show, The Freedom Fiends, is on, we're on 31 terrestrial radio stations, and one of them is actually in my town, Casper, Wyoming. And I was told by somebody who's, who is the guy who runs Talkers Magazine, which is like, you know, Billboard magazine for talk radio. It's the industry magazine. Told me that I'm probably one of the only, if not the only, talk show hosts in America who can actually listen to his show on radio, because it's on in my town and it's delayed by an hour or two, or by 2 hours. So I could actually listen to it. You know, most people are either live in their hometown or not on the radio in their hometown, but I listened to it, and it's a 1,000-watt station, which is pretty powerful, you know, for a small town. It covers the whole town, and I mean, it covers to like, you know, a quarter of the state. Wyoming's big, like, you know, 100 miles away, you can get this station, sort of. But like at my house, and I'm pretty much almost line of sight with the antenna, about a mile away. Like, it sounds better. Our show sounds better on the podcast than it does on the radio. You know, like radio doesn't sound as good as a well-made podcast on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I would 100% agree. You can pause it.
Well, yeah.
You don't have as many ads.
You know, you can pause it. You can skip ads if they're there.
Yeah, the ads kill me, man.
What ads need to do is you just got to do the live reads, like in the middle of like a segment. You just have to read in the middle of a segment.
I hate live reads.
That's the only way to get people to not go, oh, turn on the radio for 5 minutes while the ads are going.
Or make ads that sound good, like the Freedom Fiends do.
Yeah.
I'm the a-hole that has like every ad blocked on everything, that has no cookies, no nothing, you know, turn down the radio.
Do you listen to The Fiends, though?
I do listen to The Fiends, podcast.
Our ads are pretty listenable.
I can't avoid those. So if I can't avoid them, I have to hear them, right?
No, you can skip them. You could.
I don't. I don't. I like to hear the whole intro to the Freedom Fiends. It gets me hyped up.
Cool.
Yeah. Hey, still gets me going every day.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you know your theory for you know where radio is going as like literally a tool of the state at that point. I mean, I could see that. I guess I was kind of thinking the opposite. I was thinking that because everything's shifting towards the internet, that it will be because it becomes obsolete, it'll kind of become useless to everybody. And then, I mean, is it at that point? What I mean, if that was the case, wouldn't it still be a useful medium for transmitting stuff? You know,
well, they'll be pumping it into public schools and prisons and stuff.
Well, again, I'm saying I thought they'd forget about it, but I think Michael's, I guess that kind of makes sense too, that they would just use it to drone everybody out constantly. Right. More so than they do now.
Yeah, I think like TV has become a tool of the state. I mean, radio's same thing. And I mean, slowly TV is becoming obsolete as well.
Radio is a tool of the state, though. I don't know if you guys listen to a lot of talk radio or look. I've looked at a lot of websites of talk radio because I have to look at them to find the information to contact them to get on them. They almost all of them have like a flag banner at the top of the website, and a lot of them A really common interview for like a local radio station is interviewing the chief of police. They do it all the time, and they interview all the local politicians, and you know, all the interviews just basically come down to like, be very afraid, and you know, the government needs more of your money because be very afraid.
Yeah, yeah, we got people dying on the streets every day. We need to raise these taxes and save these kids.
Yeah,
I guess that makes sense. I haven't listened to radio since I
just don't have time.
Well, I don't even care about time. I don't find the time. I stopped listening to the radio when I kind of started putting all the pieces together. I just cut all that stuff out of my life. It was just easier. Radio, TV.
It always shocked me. And I used to listen to Sirius XM a lot. And I immediately, when they fired Anthony from Opie and Anthony, I called the same day and I said, the reason I'm canceling is because you fired him for no reason. And, well, whenever you hire him back, I'll resubscribe. Cause you know, I was like an ardent Opie and Anthony listener for like 10 years, you know,
he's a statist though. He's kind of a right winger, isn't he?
Oh, he's definitely, you know, I listen to it mostly for comedy, you know, cause I'm, you know, I'm kind of, you know, whatever. I've always kind of been the guy that like always sits back and looks what's going on and kind of figures out what's the best, point or side. And I always, before I, you know, found anarchy and, you know, free, you know, the freedom, you know, ideas of freedom, I was always like conservative, right wing, you know. And so I always loved Anthony on the show. So
I grew up with Howard Stern.
I've never been a big fan of Stern.
My father used to drive me to school. Like if I missed a school bus, he would drive me to school, play Howard Stern in the car. As I get into school, I open the door, he's saying bye, and he's blasting Howard Stern. It's like, so how big are your boobs?
Like, hey, that's man. Funny. You're. I see. I can't picture your dad was a Howard Stern fan. That's funny, man.
Big time. And I think I know that. That I got to him a little bit, but then after he got onto Sirius, right, XM, he got, and then that's it.
Oh, yeah, he's Stern. He lost his fire a long time ago. I think, whatever, I'll sell out to Sirius XM and just, he was doing, what, three shows a week? Monday was a replay of Friday, and Friday was a replay of Monday.
Well, I think he's also,
or something like that.
He's also been in the business for what, 40 something years at this point. I think he just wanted to cut back. Can't really blame the guy. I mean, whatever. I listened to him for a while. He was, you know,
I bet Michael would like to cut back for $50 million.
Would like to what? Cut back?
Yeah, cut back for $50 million.
Cut back.
I'd cut back for $50. No, I don't want to cut back. I like doing as much as I do. But
no, it was I was being ironic or not. I know. Ironic, but,
I know, but I was answering it really for real. Yeah.
So the Freedom Fiends is your basically your project, and there's a ton of them. There's a ton of fiends on there. I love listening to it because you can pick out your favorite fiends and be like, ooh, they're on this night, or they're on this night, or I don't really like these guys. So it's like, it's not just the same two guys or the same one guy every night. And it's really, I really like it. It's like a evolving round table that always is changing.
Yeah.
This is Dave's little way of saying he doesn't listen when I'm on.
I hear your voice enough. Jeremy, man, it's like how much, you know, it's like you hear my voice is enough. You're like, I don't need to hear him talk anymore. There's nothing he's gonna say that I haven't heard. So, but you know, on the fiends, it's like, you know, Monday, I don't want to listen to that. Tuesday, oh wow, two of my favorite guys are on, or two of my, you know, favorite hosts are on. And I was just really impressed by how they stepped up when you were going through all that that rough, I don't know, I would say 6-7 months there.
Yeah, I'm still sick, but I'm not nearly as sick as I was, you know, 6 months ago. Around May, June last year, I was horribly sick. I mean, to the point where I just was hoping I would die. I was that sick. I have some kind of lung problem that hasn't really been fully diagnosed. It's being treated to an extent. It's basically a combination. It's basically really bad asthma and really bad allergies. Like record-breaking allergies. Allergies are measured by something called IgE levels, and most people who aren't sick and don't have allergies are generally around 75 to 100. People who have allergies are like 300 to 350 IgE levels. My IgE levels were like 2,500.
I'm allergic to cats and dogs, and it's not bad. Like, my eyes really, really get bad, and my nose runs and bleeds sometimes. But so I can imagine I'm like the average allergic person. So you're like the Superman of allergic people.
Yeah. And part of it is that I'm allergic to smoke, and I have asthma, and I smoked for 30 years. You know, I smoked 2 packs a day for 30 years. And I'm also allergic to cats, and I had cats for about the past 22 years. Wow. And so I'm not smoking now, and I don't have cats anymore.
I think I read something about how to get rid of they were curing allergies with cannabis oil or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Don't start that. What does this stuff not cure?
Yeah. I have like 10 people a week write me and say, you have to try this. Like this week it was somebody said I had to try acupuncture, and somebody else said I had to try eating nothing but steak. I'm really sick of advice.
I agree that you should eat nothing but steak, but
bacon.
Danilo here is an acupuncturist, and if you wanted some clarity on it, I'm sure he can tell you some stuff.
No, I don't.
No. That's what I was saying. Don't start with that, man.
Yeah, and it's not like.
So you just think the cannabis oil thing is like snake oil?
No, I'm just really sick of people with no medical training telling me that their certain thing that they're happy about is something I have to do, and then they get mad at me when I say, no thanks, man. I mean, people are religious about stuff. And, you know, another thing is, like, after I quit smoking, I vaped for 4 years. And I haven't vaped in nearly a year, but I believe that the vaping is part of what harmed me. And people who vape get really pissed when I say that. And, like, you know, they basically say, oh, you're just a pawn of the government. And what it really comes down to is not everything the FDA says is bad is good for you. And I think a lot of people who don't trust the government, you know, since the FDA is wrong on some things, they believe that if the FDA says something is bad, you should literally go out and take a lot of it because they think it's good for you.
Yeah.
Your vaping is not good for you. It might be better for you than smoking, but your body, your lungs are not made to inhale, you know, sticky vapor. It's not what they're made to do.
Yeah, I mean, you do cough up the VG all day when you vape like I do.
Well, when I got off vaping, I couldn't breathe for like months. Like, I had to be put on oxygen therapy, and I'm still on oxygen therapy part time, but I had to be on it full time, and it still like barely enabled me to breathe. I mean, my oxygen level was like.
Did you feel like you had popcorn lung?
I've read about that. I don't know.
Because that's how PG, if I do like a 50-50, I know what that means. So like if I do a 50-50, it really messes with me. Like it just doesn't feel right. But if I do like anything, like I normally shoot for like the 10 or the 15 or the really, really low PG, and I don't have any issues. No like crazy breathing issues or anything like that. And if I ever like felt like I was having something like that, I would stop immediately.
Yeah. I didn't.
It's way better than smoking cigarettes, I can tell you that much.
I don't know. I think in a way it was worse for me personally because I was able to do the equivalent of like I was smoking 3 packs a day by the time I quit. I smoked 60 pack years. That's how they measure it. So like an average of 2 packs a day for 30 years, but it was basically like a pack a day for 10 years, 2 packs a day for 10 years, and 3 packs a day for 10 years. So by the time I was done, I was smoking 3 packs a day, and then I switched to vaping. But I on vaping, since it didn't physically hurt my lungs as much as smoking, I was probably vaping the equivalent of 6 packs of cigarettes a day. I mean, I was smoking like, you know, 21 milligram vape and chain vaping it from the time I went up till the time I went to sleep, to the point where I was so addicted to nicotine too that I would wake up after 4 hours craving it and have to vape and then go back to sleep. Like, yeah, I couldn't make it through 8 hours of sleep without
the
vaping.
Vaping is to fight, you fight down your nicotine. So, like, when I started, I was on, and you know, it changes from like heat and coil and stuff and how much it disperses and stuff. So, like, 12 milligrams on like my mod would like blow your head off if you're used to like even 28 on like a pen or something.
Oh, yeah, 28, not 21. 28 is what I was doing. Well, I didn't do any mods. I used off the shelf stuff, but it was still pretty
See, now the
a lot.
Off the shelf stuff is what has all the crazy crap in it.
Dave's going to try to convince you that.
No, I'm not going to try to convince you of anything.
I mean, you can talk about this all day long, but you're basically, what this is equivalent to me is like, you know, I'm also a recovering heroin addict with 22 years sober, and this is like someone telling me, well, if you take your heroin only before breakfast and only after lunch, you don't get addicted, man. I'm like, I'm not going to fucking...
Michael, you like cats and
I'm not
going
to do heroin. Yeah, well, I had to give them up too. The road gets really narrow, man. I'm 52 and it's like, you know, what pleasure do I have left? I have coffee left and I can barely drink that because I have high blood pressure from some of the meds I'm on, you know?
Oh, man.
So, but I drink it.
So let me change the subject a little bit. I just want to say that we recently interviewed Nick Hazelton. We had him on the show, and,
oh, that
and
guy.
I interviewed him recently for my show, and I was really amazed at what he's done at his young age. And,
I know.
And how you helped him out with getting his podcast
you,
started.
You built that.
And
I
that
built
really
that.
Awesome. You know? I'm really
well.
Really
I mean,
with,
you can really like see his change. If you go back and listen, like the first times he was on the show, like 2 years ago, he was shy and meek, and like, you know, like talked like this far away from the mic, and like I had to keep telling, you know, and now he's like, he kind of reminds me of you know, those nature shows where you see like the, you know, the young juvenile young adult lion like challenges the sick old lion, like that's what he's doing to me now. He's trying to take over my show.
I like
it.
Nick,
I like
he's
it.
He's a really cool kid.
Yeah,
it's funny. I've actually got to know Nick a little bit before I started doing the Fiends. But he, I actually when it was, I think it was the first day the app went live.
Yeah, that was a great day. I remember that day fondly.
It was a wonderful day.
Do you guys have the app? Do you guys have the Freedom Fiends app?
I sure do.
Sure.
And I have the LRN app as well.
Oh, the LRN app is now obsolete because you can use the Fiends app to listen
exactly.
to LRN.
I got rid of mine once I got it because you can still use it.
Oh, the LRN app was so buggy on my phone.
It is.
But no, the first day I ended up using the you know, the 24/7 feature.
Yeah.
And I landed a Nick episode.
An old Nick episode.
One of the first times he was on, and it was like, oh my God. Cause I mean, I've heard the show that he did with the, like, what was it? I guess he called in, was it Free Talk that he called in the very first time?
Maybe.
Free Talk Live? Mm-hmm. Brett Vinat just happened to be on there that night, I think. But yeah, so like you definitely can hear the transition. I tell him all the time when I talk to him, I'm like, I'm so thrilled that he exists, and I'm jealous of him at the same time.
I know.
Because he put everything together so much earlier than I did.
Well, he's standing on the shoulders of giants too, and not just me. It's you know, when I was 17, I hated authority, but I didn't know what to do about it. And I was constantly told, to the point where I believed it almost, that there was something wrong with me because I hated authority. Like, I didn't know what libertarianism was when I was 17. I didn't know what anarcho-capitalism was. I don't think anybody knew what, you know, only in, God, when I was 17, what's that? I was born in 64, 74, 84, 83, 82, 81, in 81, you know, the only people who knew what anarcho-capitalism were like academics, you know, like people reading Mises and stuff. You know, there wasn't the internet. There wasn't, you know, if I'd had a book called anything about anarcho-capitalism and I had it in school, they probably would have sent me to the principal's office. They probably would have called my parents. You know, they would have said, there's something wrong with this kid. Yeah,
you're right. They would have.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, what are you reading? Is this like communist?
Although there's also, I got to say, there's also like good things that happened because there wasn't an internet and because everything wasn't so interconnected. I got away with things that kids wouldn't get away with now, and I'm not even going to say what they were, and there's nothing, there were no victims in any of this, but like, I had curiosities about things when I was a teenager and reading things and looking for sources of information about things, for things that, like, you know, would get you the DHS knocking at your door now. But yeah, like, nobody knows it because, you know, it was in a local library and there's no record of it. So, yeah.
True. Yeah. I only got that for a couple of years because I got to spend like a few years before the internet really took off.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, people like Nick, like, they will not know. Well, actually, he, I guess, knows a little bit. Was like, no. Well, wait, when was he born?
He's only 17. Wait, he was born in 98.
Right. So he never, So people living now, it's amazing that they never can experience life without the internet. It's, to me, that's just
it's amazing, isn't it?
Unheard of. I can't believe that. It's,
I remember VCR tapes. Do you guys remember those? God.
Yeah. You know, I watch a lot of these shows. Rewind. Like, I was, yeah. I asked Nick if he knew what Be Kind Rewind meant, and he didn't.
Oh, my God.
But how old are you guys? All of you?
28.
I am 32.
Oh, 33.
Sorry.
Janelle doesn't know how old it is. I just turned 39, so.
I'm all right, Grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's.
I'll be 52 in May. I like the period that I've been alive. It's an interesting period to be alive because, you know, I mean, like, I was 5 years old. I watched the first man walk on the moon on TV. I watched the Vietnam War, which was the first, like, broadcast war on TV, and like, was anti-war as a kid, and that's the only, like, that's the longest running belief I have, is being anti-war. But I thought you had to be anti-gun to be anti-war until I was about 40 and got guns.
And everyone knows that guns are the road to freedom, right?
Yeah, man. And I've watched technology change in a really broad way. Like, this section of time I've been alive, you know, we've gone from, like, reel-to-reel tape recorders to, like, you know, the Freedom Fiends app. And, you know, we've gone from, like when I was a kid, like, all I wanted to do was communicate with people that I couldn't see. You know, I lived in this tiny little town in upstate New York, 3,000 people, really boring town, really boring people. Nobody really, you know, exceptional. From there, I mean, the most exceptional person to ever come from my county besides me was Natalie Merchant from the 10,000 Maniacs and Lucille Ball. That's it. And when I was a kid, like, they used to have ads in magazines, like, for pen pals, you know, like, write to people you don't know. And I did that. And I would, like, I was always sending away for things and catalogs and, you know, trying to get in, like, I used to, have you ever heard those ads for, like, the government printing office in Pueblo, Colorado? It's one of the few things the government does that's useful. And I don't think they do it anymore, but they used to have, like, government publications on everything. Like, if you wanted to know how to, you know, alternate crops for better, you know, soil, or if you wanted to know how to, like, build a ham radio, or if you wanted to know how to learn Morse code, or if you want to learn how to can your own food, like, the government had a pamphlet for under a dollar on that, and I used to order those all the time on all sorts of things.
And then YouTube just
well, yeah, there was no YouTube, there's no, you know, World Wide Web. I mean, there was an internet, but it was like government and colleges only, and I'd never heard of it. I had heard of computers. I'd actually, like, sat down at a mainframe computer when I was 10 years old in 74 in New Hampshire when I was visiting my sister at her college.
Were you a big fan of AOL chat rooms?
No.
I feel like you weren't big on, like, the chat room, like, the chatting either? Like, the
I got on
instant messaging?
No. I got on my history with computers is basically in 1991, you know, which is after, like, Windows 3.1 came out, but I had a DOS computer that could not connect to the internet, and I wrote my first novel on that, and that came out in, like, 99, and I self-published it. There was no on-demand printing. It's like I went to a print house, you know, to a publisher, mm-hmm. and got it printed. And let's see. So my first computer that was connected to the internet was like a 386 Windows 3.1 that my sister had. She worked at Cornell University. She worked at Cornell University, and you know, they'd bought her a 486, so she gave me her 386, and I had a friend in San Francisco help me get online with it. And so I tried to get on using something called Fognet in 1995 or Well, actually, I had a job at one of the first internet cafes in 94. It wasn't an internet cafe. It was an internet steakhouse at 9th and Folsom in San Francisco. And I say that corner because that corner, that commercial space is like destined to fail. Like there were like four businesses a year open and close on that spot. And this was they had the internet, they had dial up, and they'd bring you a nice steak and you sit at your table. And the reason it failed was they didn't realize people wanted privacy, and like the monitors were up on the wall for everyone to see what you were doing on the internet, and that didn't fly. So because everyone wanted to look at porn.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. So I was on the internet a little bit there. I was working as a busboy.
Ended up as a voyeur shop.
Busboy and dishwasher. So then in like early 96, I got the internet at home, and I actually pretty quickly got DSL, which nobody had in 96. And it was like, I had it because I was, you had to live in like one of three cities, and you had to be like within 1,000 feet of a telephone company. And I had both of those things. So by the end of 96, I had like Pac Bell DSL at home, and I had AOL for a minute. No, I didn't have AOL. I had Earthlink. I don't think I ever had AOL. I had Earthlink for a couple months, and then I got DSL, and like, I never really got in the chat rooms, and I'd used AOL at friends' houses, but it was such a walled garden. It wasn't really the internet, you know. It was like, no. Yeah, you could mainly only be in their little walled garden with other AOL users, and I didn't like that. So, I had DSL and my own website that I designed with like hand coding HTML. By my website, kittyfeet.com, went live, and I still have that domain. Went live Thanksgiving Day 1996. Yeah. So that's how long.
You could sell that domain for a ton.
Why? I don't think so. For what? A catwalking service?
No, it could be a funny site. I don't know. I mean, I can't have cheeseburgers, a massive site. So
I had a domain in 97 that I probably could have sold if I'd held on to it. It was punkrocksex.com. And that was before the Suicide Girls. Like, I was envisioning making something kind of like Suicide Girls, and I registered that domain but never did anything with it, and then it expired a few years later.
Oh, man. Yeah, so you can't go back and get it?
No. I'm not good at doing things just to make money. I've never been successful at it. The only thing is I've made money at, and I've made a living doing my own thing for like 14, 15 years now. But the only time I've ever, like, the things I've made money at are things that I would have done anyway for free, you know. I'm not the guy that registers a smart domain name and then sells it later. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
If you could go back in time, right when the internet came out, and just buy it like Coke, Pepsi.
Those you would have gotten sued away from. What you should have done was registered things like drugs.com and sex.com. Like, those both sold for six figures at some point.
Oh, yeah, all the ones. Well, if you registered Twitter before Twitter was even made.
No, Twitter just would have called itself something else. Hey, I got to wrap it up here and go eat dinner. You guys got any final arguments or questions?
No, Michael, that's all right, man. We'll let you run.
All right. It's been an honor, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for coming on.
When is this going up?
It'll be up Monday morning.
All right. I have a recording of it, too, if yours crashed or anything.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks, you guys.
I'll be in touch.
Thank you, Michael.
Worms.
I'll be in touch, Michael. Later.
Worms.
Bye.
Worms.